live to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's Articles of News, part two, because there's a lot of news, I've decided. So when I can, and until life gets busier, since I haven't been good about giving you episodes this year in 2016, I'm trying to make amends for it.
Don't be so hard on yourself, Richie.
Oh, come on, baby. I'm going to give you as many episodes as we can while we can. Look forward to an episode tomorrow. The episode is called Porn, Now What?
Yeah.
We talk with soon-to-be Dr. Hodson, Kristen Hodson, and Nate Bagley from the Love You Mentory about, okay, so your spouse or your loved one, you go, hey, I was looking on the computer, I borrowed your phone for a hot minute, and I found a little something. So we talk all about...
And it was one hot minute, yeah. Let me tell you.
We talk all about how that's going to go. So look forward to that. That's episode 223 here in the Cultural Hall. We'll post tomorrow, Friday. But right now, it's Articles of News for the second half of the week of the 17th of November. It's me, Richie T, and as you already heard...
It's Britt or Bratton or whichever you prefer.
It's Britt.
Well, depending on what part of the world you're in, it's Bratton or Britt.
Oh, really?
Or Bratton. Or Britt. Yeah.
And we are going to do some news for you. The nice thing that I like about doing this in kind of two chunks is that we can actually delve a little bit into the news and we don't go too long. We know life's busy, right?
Yeah, you know, you and I are succinct. We're like, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld says, we're like the Mad Libs of the panelists here.
We get right to the point, get it done. I want to know what's going on with you, and then I've got a few emails based on last week's articles and news that I want to share with folks.
Okay, let's see what's going on. I found out today at work that I'm going to be moving to remote status.
Working from home.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you this. Yeah. Have you thought through the rules for yourself for working at home?
What do you mean? Like showering and all that?
Yeah. Like...
Well, yeah,
I mean, yeah, actually. I mean, you say that jokingly, but yeah, like, do you plan to have your office? Is it going to be in your bedroom?
Well, at first, yeah. One of my roommates will probably get married here in the next 6 months, so I figure maybe when he gets married, I could turn his bedroom across my hall into an office,
okay.
So, which I've done before. So,
then do you also have rules? Like, do you have to be working, quote-unquote, by a certain time?
Well, yeah, it's 8 to 5.
Okay.
So the thing is, for me, it's not going to be a big deal because, I could still go into work for meetings and stuff because I work really close anyway. But, like, I figure I have a dog. I have an hour-long lunch break. I could walk her at lunch. I wake up really early, very easily these days, so I could go swim laps before work. And then when I get off, my commute's like 2 minutes, so it's not going to be any different.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you're pretty close to work anyway. So
yeah, so I'll still be depressed and lonely when I get home from work. So, hey. No change there.
Now you get 4 more minutes of it every day.
Yes. I hate my life. So get a night job, I guess.
No, you don't. You don't hate your life or your job, do you? Your job's pretty good.
My job's fine. It pays the bills. It's got benefits. That's
nice.
A fundamental thing. So
you rent out a house. I've thought about this. So this kind of... dovetails into what's new for me. I just found out today my appraisal came back.
Nice.
The furthering of the homesteadman.
Hey, I can dig it.
Nice.
I like that.
That's Jenny Molly that came up with that idea.
Homesteadman. Yeah, mine's the stud stable, which you mentioned before.
The homesteadman, where I'm thinking about maybe renting that place out.
Like what? The basement or what?
No, like renting it out, like not even living there. Like
just staying with your brother.
I mean, I guess it's a couple of things because life is sort of up in the air.
Sure.
Yeah. My brother and I are looking at maybe working together on some things. Should that be the case, it's going to be far more advantageous for us to live together. And should that be the case, I may just, with this home that I'm buying, I'm either going to flip it. So in 6 months from now, I'll be telling you the woes of trying to sell a home.
Or rolling in the Benjis, as they say.
or I may try and rent it out and just, you know, have it be as an investment thing. Do you like doing that?
Renting has its ups and downs. My biggest piece of advice would be only rent to referrals, like people you know personally or through people you trust. Because too many times I've been... screwed, I mean, by people who are bad that it seemed fine, you know, and you lived there, so you know, there were some weirdos that came and went. And
no woman, no cry, baby. No woman,
well,
no
that
cry.
Was one of the least extreme examples of what the bad things that happened, but But yeah, it's good, but there's sometimes when I wish I didn't have to rent. But right now I rent to a close friend and my sibling and my nephew. And my nephew bugs me the most, but he's gone a lot. So.
Right. And he's family, so you can't, like, you know that you're not ever going to get stiffed, right? Because he's family?
Yeah, I could call his dad and say,
hey, listen, your kid is being a jerk.
Well, his dad already knows that. So. But yeah, he had a bunch of friends over last night and could smell a lot of interesting smells coming from the basement.
Well,
some herbal
oregano. Was it paprika?
Probably.
Yeah.
No, it was. Yeah. let's be honest here. But I already knew that about him, and I thought he stopped for a while, but now he's starting to smoke again a lot in the backyard, so I got to deal with that.
So then the other question I have is, you alluded to the long, depressing commute home and then the long, depressing nights. The mid-single stuff, how's that going for you? It just changed the ward boundaries in the Salt Lake Valley again. Yeah.
So I really liked my old ward. I liked the Bishopric. They were really cool. It took me a while to get, open myself, but I was the most proactive I ever been in a ward. Now I'm back to being total passive and under the radar. I don't really like my new ward.
Yeah.
Like, people ask me straight up, and I say, I don't really like it. Not very many people say that. Like, really? Because everybody says they like it a lot. And I'm like, well, to be honest, it's too serious. There's not an air of awareness of the ridiculousness of the situation. Our old bishopric had that. They had a self-deprecation about their humor and stuff. Like, we're a bunch of 30, late 30, 40 year somethings being babysat by 50 and 60 somethings. You know?
Sure.
And so they make jokes about it, but they're very respectful of people's plight or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And this one is like very serious all the time. And the elders' quorum is super serious. And my old elders' quorum, it was funny. We had this cohesive group where we just joke around, but we were still spiritual, and
sure,
our home teaching was like record setting. We had it like in the 90 percentile.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because the guy who led it, he just treated us with respect, so we didn't feel like we were being guilt-tripped. We all just kind of just did it because he was cool about it, you know.
Nice.
And so,
not the case now.
No, because they're like very specific with their rules. They're like, well, we want you to have an in-house visit,
sure,
with everyone, including men. And it's kind of like, well, if a guy says he doesn't need a visit, he doesn't, you know.
Right.
And
you can't force it.
In a mid-singles ward. And so, and then, you know, a lot of times you do where the sister wants at church. If she wants it in her home, fine, go to her home. But we were counting like reaching out like through text if they couldn't meet or something. And this ward, they're very specific. And it's just,
but wasn't there a talk? Where was it at? This last general conference? Priesthood session? Was that what it was?
I don't know. I
priesthood session
it
this time, last time, so. Where it's just like, don't ask if it counts. It counts. Did you try and, you know, share love? Did you try and share a message? Did you think about the other? Okay, it counts. We need to get away from, does this count or does this not count?
Well, yeah, that's what I think. Especially with the dudes, like, you just say hi to them or whatever and like count it, you know. But like sisters, you kind of know if they need something more, sure, than just a hi.
You know,
you
what
should
the,
be.
You know, let me counter that though. I feel like you always have to make the offer of the message, right?
Sure.
Because some people would say to me, because I'm an outgoing guy, because I, you know, I'm fairly communicative or whatever, I think that a lot of times I'll get passed over for things when in genuine.
True.
You know, if someone would say, hey, could you use a message? I was like, yeah, you know what? I don't have a lot of time, but I could use 5 minutes of something inspiring, please, for the love. And I think I get looked over because people got, nah, he's fine. And I go, no, not fine. Not
okay,
fine at
fair
all.
Enough. Yeah, I think that's a good point. So I will alter my attitude and say, hey, do you need us to send you a message? But when they reach out to me, I get a little dismissed, but I try not to be a jerk. I'm trying to be more like, hey, I'm fine, you know, and thanks for our offering, but I don't need an in-house visit.
Sometimes, Britt.
Yeah.
Sometimes, maybe it's not you that needs the message. Maybe sometimes it's them that needs to provide the message. I actually try and think about that because you hear that so much. And I don't know. There's been times where it's been that for me, where I don't think that the people I home taught got any sort of message out of it, but where I was just taking the time to, you know, put together a message and study the scriptures because I knew I was going to someone's house.
Sure.
Gave me that 5 minute window, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, and then a montage of you helping an old lady bake cookies with her dog. And if only you believe in yourself. You know, something like that.
Or she's blind and
drops the salt into the
top. It's peanut brittle and it's bad.
Tis the season, right, Richie? It's
Let
coming
Earth
back.
Receive
Her King.
I love that movie. Nora's Christmas Gift.
Are you going to do an event where you watch that movie?
You know what?
You should do a podcast.
Maybe in my
doing commentary.
maybe in my new house.
Okay, I can dig it.
You know, in my new house.
Yeah.
Have I told you about this?
Yeah.
I got the house.
Yeah.
And then I got the studio in the backyard.
Studio.
I have another building that I'm going to convert into a studio if I decide to stay there and live there.
Okay.
It's an outbuilding.
So if you have like some family in the future, you could be like Charles in charge. Yeah. Or you could rent it to a family and you could be
I don't think it's zoned for living. No, but I really want to make it because there's heating and air conditioning and the whole deal.
Nice. And then you could do your screenings in there and have people over. And
watch. And then I don't have to let people around stuff that I care about. They can just be in the studio, right? So they don't get steely.
Now, how did you preface that? You said in my house or in Richie's house? What did you just say? Because you should have like a Twitter series where you started at in Richie's house.
Yeah.
There will be this. There will be studio in the backyard with movie nights.
My very house. Yeah. It's the Homesteadman. And then I was trying to think of, there was something else that what you had brought up. Oh, so this is kind of exciting too. We'll go back to into a little bit because I want to talk about you going on your dates. You don't have to tell me who you're going with or anything like that.
Okay.
But tonight I'm kind of nervous.
Oh yeah, why is that?
There's a girl who I am seeing.
Yeah.
This is Seaweed for those who have listened for a while. If you don't get it, I don't care. I'm giving some point of reference.
Okay.
She hates that, but it's the only thing I think that we've mentioned about her here in the cultural hall.
All right.
She is not LDS, and she has asked me to give her a blessing tonight.
For real?
Yeah. Because really? I said, hey, you know what? We do blessings. That's a thing. She has some health stuff, and I was like, yeah, I would love to.
So is she religious on some level?
Yeah. Like yeah, very religious.
What religion?
But not a particular religion, but very like...
in tune, sort of.
Yeah, and like takes the time to meditate and to pray, and you know what
that's
I'm
good.
Saying? Like in a way that I feel like more
stuff.
Mormon people could really benefit
that's,
from, right?
That's the kind of Mormon I am. I'm based more on my faith on praying when the chips are down and believing in a fundamental belief in God, but like... The fringe stuff I'm not super keen on sometimes.
Right, so, right.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's very impressive to me as far as that goes. But I'm a little nervous about it.
Yeah? Well, you should be. Performance anxiety.
Yeah, right? Like, honored. Don't make jokes about that in this context, but I appreciate that. Thank you. No, but it's a pretty big honor. When I was married, I didn't get the opportunity to give blessings altogether that much. My ex-wife, not necessarily a fan of all that.
Yeah.
And then my kid only once or twice because it was that whole dad, stepdad, teenage angst and religion issue. So,
I'm all about that.
You know, didn't necessarily get the chance to do that much. So it's really cool to have someone that, you know, I care about on some level. Don't worry, everyone. I'm not getting married. I'm not, you know what I'm saying? Let's calm down.
I was about to ask, Richie, do I hear wedding bells?
I mean, you guys have known each other. That was a couple months now, so...
When's she getting baptized?
Yeah, right. And all the inappropriate questions for when you're dating someone who's not part of the faith. Anyway, but like, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
It's kind of this excited angst I have.
Mapping it out in your head a little bit? Like
no.
Where you might go?
Just going, oh, please. But the other thing, though, too, is, and I recognize this, you know, because I've been staying with my dad, going to be staying with my brother soon, but my, what would she be to me? My niece, who hasn't really been raised, in a religion at all, and certainly not the Mormon faith, she was over and my dad gave her a blessing. And before my dad gave her a blessing, because she's got some family stuff and is going to save their mom, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But my dad took this time before the blessing to kind of explain some things so that it isn't kind of so foreign, right?
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, you know, if you're like... You know, you're even just the structure of, hey, I'm going to say your name, you know, and then by the power of the Melchizedek priesthood, like, you know, I feel like if you're able to kind of talk a little about some of the structure stuff to people who aren't familiar with that, they can focus on the parts of the blessing that come through the Spirit and from God rather than who's Melchizedek? What did he say? Yeah. What is that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I found that fascinating because my dad, for a good 5-7 minutes probably said, you know, and then, you know, we'll end this way. And,
nice. You
know, this is kind of how this means. And it was a really kind of a unique opportunity to see my dad in that role with my niece, but then also to now have this opportunity where I'm going, I don't want to give too much, right? I have the tendency to be like, and Melchizedek back in the day, he would, and then there was the, you know, but I do want to give enough context where it's not like, this is
why
weird,
are you saying this?
What or is... I don't understand what this means.
Well, yeah, my sister, who's not super religious, she was, well, not at all anymore, but she was Mormon until she was about 14, to her rebellious stage. But occasionally she gets really sick or something, and then she'll ask for some kind of blessing, you know. And my brother, older brother, came and gave it to her once a couple of years ago, and then, yeah, he did that. He, like, said, okay, well, this isn't just a thing where we just do it. This is based a lot on your faith, and, you know, you have to take steps to be... not worthy, but he said, like, to receive the blessing, you know, and to, like, you know, exercising faith by asking for it. But this is not just a simple thing where this is going to heal you, because she was really sick. You just have to be able to, you know, take the proper steps to do your part to receive the blessing of health. And she's, those are one of the few times I see her be religious is when she's sick. And then occasionally she'll come to, like, family baptisms and stuff. But I know she, a lot of times claims she has no belief, but, like, I see the fundamental belief in her occasionally. So, sure. Yeah, that's one of those times.
So let's talk about your dates this weekend.
Yeah.
That's exciting, right? Because I've known Britt now for 11 and a half years. You were my first intern in the day job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's a long... Isn't that crazy? We've known each other for more than a decade.
That's what happens when you become old. It's like 10 years passes like that. For 10 years before that was like the whole lifetime, you know? But, right.
But yeah, that blows my mind to know that we've been friends for more than 10 years.
I know.
But you're one who doesn't necessarily... date a lot, I don't think. I think that I feel like you're always doing stuff with people,
yeah,
but not necessarily dates. You're definitely in that mid-singles awkward, which I'm in as well, right?
Yeah.
You've never been married.
Well, I don't like to date for the sake of dating, per se. Anybody who knows me knows this. I'm kind of maybe too picky. I only go out with girls who really catch my attention.
Sure.
And because of that, I end up upset a lot, or I don't go out on a ton of dates. But, you know, it's expensive to go on dates, and a lot of times when I'm on a date with somebody I don't want to necessarily be with, it's kind of like pulling teeth. But, you know, there's girls.
When you sometimes get angry, right? So, like, if you go out and you're not having a good time, it can be expensive, and you're like, what am I doing?
Jeez. Yeah, there's things I've done where I can control the date. Like, I just do an activity that, like, in the summer kayaking, I can decide if I want to go out for dinner after or whatever.
Right.
Or
you kind of do the thing and then go, yeah, this is going well. Let's do this. Or you go... cut, run, out.
Yeah, and I just say, hey, I'll be in touch. Then I text him once, and then...
So then my question is, how has it fallen that you're two times on the same weekend? And
well, I've had a lot of motivation lately. I mean, one of the reasons I've been going home from work is I got involved, like I mentioned on the last podcast, with someone from work, and she's not LDS, and was very exciting at first. We sort of connected and on a work trip, and she sort of turned my emotional world upside down because she was so exciting and so attractive physically to me and everything else, and we laughed together. We still do. We have a very similar sense of humor.
But it didn't work out.
No, and it's been a roller coaster ever since, where I am super upset. The highs are very high, but there's way more lows than the highs. And right. She sent me a lot of confusing signals.
Women, am I right?
Yeah, and she's been hurt in her life a lot, so she kind of throws caution to the wind when it comes to other people's emotions. So because of that, because I don't want to be affected by that, and it was bad the last 2 weeks, and that's why I requested to go home, I've been trying to be more proactive about dating more girls, different types of girls. There's certainly girls I'm more attracted to that I'm trying to date too, but those are harder to... I don't know, work with sometimes. Yeah, sure. I still hold out hope and work on them. But the other girls, I'm like, well, here, there's a slight connection with this, and I should just go out with them. Just, you call it networking, just to just to explore the idea for practice, whatever you want.
Sure.
And to be more confident. So the thing that this girl did for me that gave me so much trouble is I'm a lot more confident because, you know, like it had been a while since I'd been in something like that, you know, exciting and passionate from the beginning. And so now I'm like, well, I'm more motivated to.
It kind of reminds you that you can be like, oh, yeah, there are people out there. And
yeah,
that's great.
And I
to
can
be
confident.
Thing, and I am a good person.
About this. And they're, yeah. You know, and so, you know, my personality counts for a lot, I think. And if I'm relaxed, girls tend to like me a lot, it feels like. So,
yeah, my looks count for nothing.
Well, I feel that way too sometimes.
You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, you know what? That's why things like Tinder and other things, that is not where I win, right?
Well,
if I'm looking at a thing and I'm going through people, I am not a swipe right guy. I am a guy that they go, let's see, what did he write? Did he write something funny? Because that's going to be the saving grace on this guy. He didn't, okay, his thing's very funny. All right, maybe I'll swipe right. But no one is going, hey, yeah, you bet. Swipe right that
guy.
Well,
I'm the same way. My one buddy got divorced 2 years ago, and he met his wife on Tinder pretty quick, but he is a lean guy and pretty good looking, but he's had attorney under his name. He's like, do you think I should put that? And I'm like, heck. Yes, you should put that because, you know, that's going to impress a lot of women, of course, because just like a good-looking woman impresses a guy. So, and he met this really pretty former BYU soccer player. Very pretty and really nice. And so that worked out
you
quite well for him.
You should put lawyer on your Tinder profile.
I thought about it. Let's see what kind of business that drums up. But, yeah, but anyway, so.
What kind of business? I love it.
Well, because Tinder's a tool. It really
no,
is.
No,
it's also sort of a sampling thing that you can see what's out there. And you certainly in the Mormon mid-single scene, you see a lot of people you either recognize or know.
Absolutely.
And so, and it's kind of awkward because like, should I swipe right on this friend of mine? And it's like, well, I'm not attracted to her. So no, probably not. Cause I know so occasionally I have swiped right and then you match and then you end up having some weird conversation through Tinder, even though you have her phone number or whatever.
Hey.
Or you see her. So anyway, So I've been motivated, to do more things. So, like, when I see some kind of thing arise, like, for instance, I felt really bad in August. I had a big fight with this girl at work, and I was devastated. I asked for a blessing at that point from my brother-in-law because he lives down the street, and I was feeling terrible. And I didn't see her all weekend, and she was off on that Monday, this girl. And on Monday night, I went to a family home evening. I didn't really feel like going, but it was a fire up the canyon, so I'm a big supporter of fires.
Sure. And huge pyromaniac.
Yeah, and so it was a pretty typical ragtag bunch of people. Not any girls, really, I'd want to hang out with. But my roommate brought his girlfriend, and then this really pretty girl who I kind of knew, was friends with on Facebook, comes. And his girlfriend's like, oh, I know her sister. And she went over to go talk to her. And then we were sitting there sort of chatting up with the same old people we know. And I'm like, dude, let's go over there. Let's go over there right now. So I went and the four of us chatted. And I got a little closer to this girl. And that was like, you know, total antidote from the poison that was bringing me down. And I didn't get her number that night, but I got it later through stupid Facebook Messenger. But that was like that week was really tough for me, and that was really good, made me feel a lot better. And I took her on a couple dates, and I'm still sort of working on her because she's kind of aloof, but she's very pretty, and I like her. So that was an example of something that was helping me get over this other girl. And, and I have to see this girl every day at work. So now it's like when I meet people or I know people I already know, I'm starting to think, well, I should ask out this girl just because I know her. I think she's kind of pretty or kind of attractive, but I've never entertained the notion. So go out with her for the sake of doing that. So the one I have on Saturday was a girl I ran into at TJ Maxx.
Nice.
And I know her and I just said, hey, and then we don't talk a lot, but like we ended up talking for like an hour just about ideas and stuff. And it was
Which is a big deal, right?
I helped her find a towel rack, and then she goes, what are you looking for? And I said, a bed sheet. And
well, let me help you find a bed sheet.
Yeah, and I thought that was weird. I'm like, she came and helped me. And then I walked her to the checkout. I didn't buy a bed sheet, but
we were like a
little couple
because
the guy
came
like,
here looking for you.
Yeah, and I walked her to her car, and then she said she didn't want to hang out in a group setting. She doesn't do that. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll ask you out then.
Good for her.
And so, yeah.
I don't like to hang out in groups. If we go out, we'll be you and I. So
yeah, so I was like, cool. And I don't necessarily think she's a strong match for me, but I'm like,
but
whatever.
You're doing it. You know, the important thing is, and that I would realize, like, if you put on paper, really anyone that I've dated, if you said this person and this person, I don't think that I would have ever picked the people that I dated if you just on, like, that first introduction. A lot of times people would think that I would be with someone who's pretty social. I don't date people who are social at all.
Yeah.
I date people who are very supportive but really quiet. And that comes with good and bad, because when I date social people, it tires me out.
I bet.
Yeah. I get so exhausted from other people being social.
Yeah. Well, it's weird for me, too, because, like, the most success I've had in my life is with actually non-LDS girls. And a lot of times they're, like, divorcees with kids or something. And I don't know, maybe they sense the stability in me.
Sure.
Because, like, this girl at work, I was growing very attracted to her. I was never going to ask her out, but then she latched onto me in a moment of whatever. It was pretty exciting, but I threw caution to the wind. I didn't have any foresight, and in retrospect, it's like, would I do that again? And it's like, I don't know. I mean, up until recently, I was like, oh, of course I would, but now it's just like all this BS that I've been dealing with has been heavy on me, you know? So
sometimes the hurt gets too much.
Yeah.
So throw yourself out there.
Yeah, and then the other one on Sunday is
a Sunday date.
Yeah, it's a Tinder girl. I don't think she's LDS. Is probably why it's on Sunday. She suggested it, and then but she's younger. She's 10 years younger than me. But she's pretty, and she was up for it. So I mean,
what are you guys gonna do on a Sunday date?
I'll take her to dinner, I guess, and we'll see. I was looking at some things. Everything's closed. Yeah, so
that'll be cool. Take her kayaking. The lakes aren't frozen. Oh. Listen, it may be cold.
If it was
just
summer, I would probably do that.
Just don't fall out.
Yeah, just make sure you wear your dry
it's
suit.
Get really,
you got
cold.
A dry suit, right?
Yeah, you brought your own dry suit.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
All right, I want to take a break for a second, and then we'll come back and we'll do these emails that I got. That'll come up in the second half of Articles of News.
Hi, this is Dan the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. You know what? PC Laptops, we can fix your broken screen on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. We can fix most phones in less than 15 minutes. Not days or even hours, but in most cases, 15 minutes or less. How awesome is that? 15 minutes or less? That's right. Here's how it works. Bring in your broken iPhone, iPad, or Android device. We'll fix your phone while you enjoy a refreshing, complimentary beverage and snack, in most cases, in under 15 minutes. It's easy and painless. Bring your broken phones and iPads into any one of our 8 locations right now, or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE, or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com, where we can fix your broken screen on your phones and tablets in less than 15 minutes. So visit us right now at PCLaptops.com.
Utah's newest upscale catering company is now accepting bookings for the upcoming holiday and wedding season. Slick Rock Catering masterfully combines exquisite food, beautiful presentation, high-level service, and careful attention to create a special occasion that will be remembered. From award-winning food, event planning, decorating, to providing highly trained servers, Slick Rock Catering will help you make your next special event a huge success. Contact them at slickrockcatering.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the second half of the Cultural Hall to Articles of News for the week of the, what now? It's the 17th. It was the 14th when the week started, but today's the 17th.
Yeah.
And we're going to do some articles of news here in a minute. Want to share a couple emails. This one from Robert, longtime listener. This is the first time that I've written in.
Hey, Robert.
I started listening when me and my family moved to Boston to get to my Utah Cultural Hall fix.
That would be my family and I.
Okay. So I decided to write in because you said on the last week's episode that you had quite the eclectic group, but maybe missing an LDS guy with kids, right? We talked about
we did talk about
all that kind of stuff.
I'm a failure.
Well, I have to say that I fit that bill, said Robert. I've been married 14 years, have 5 kids. Oh, my gosh.
That's a lot of kids.
I live in Orem. I work in Boston. I go to school in Phoenix. I'm what in town the? Every 2 weeks, and if you need to, I'd love to contribute to the Cultural Hall family.
Did you look him up on Facebook?
What's that?
Did you look him up on Facebook?
I haven't looked him up yet. His name is Robert, or Rob, Bob, Robbie, and sometimes Bill.
Roboito.
So maybe we'll be reaching out to you, Robert. Wanted to share this email. I'm a longtime listener. I'd say a convert with Pioneer Stock. I'm not really sure what that means. So we classify listeners of the Cultural Hall a couple ways. We haven't talked about this for a while, so it's good to probably point this out.
Yeah.
If you've listened to every single episode of the Cultural Hall that's ever been created, you're a lifer with Pioneer Stock. If you've listened, just since you started, like say you start listening today and then you've listened to every one of them, you're a lifer. And then if you just catch it here and there, you're a convert, right? So that's kind of how we determine what kind of listener you are. Anyway, he says, I heard you say on the show that the Cultural Hall is representation for almost all walks of life with one exception.
Uh-oh.
That exception and void in the cast of this is the perspective and position that I could fill. I'm a father of 2 boys and happily married. I've also been drawn into the idea of being a voice on the quote, show, end quote, of some kind. I am fun, exciting, and can drop pop culture references with the best of them. If there is some kind of tryout, I will knock your socks off, he says.
Tryout.
Perfect.
More like, hey, who can do articles of this?
Yeah. He says, contact me if you're interested in my obvious talents and perspective.
Okay.
Thanks for taking the time to read my plea. Sincerely, Christopher.
Send us a face shot and resume.
I'm going to look all these guys up. And I think I actually am. I think I'm going to do an entire episode of
trying out
of getting to know the 4 guys. I will, because there's 2 more emails I got to share.
Wow. We didn't even know.
Oh, actually, I guess it's 3 emails because this email is sort of interesting. And I think it was Rob that wrote this article. I need to reach out to him. DJ Rob, are you around? Are you alive?
I don't know.
You still listen to the Cultural
Hall? Last time I checked, he was in Phoenix, and then he was in Orlando before that.
But I think he's home now.
Yeah.
He says, I just read the blog on the 20 Mormon-friendly hip-hop songs.
So this is our DJ Rob.
Yeah, I think. No, this isn't an email from DJ Rob. Oh, okay. I think that DJ Rob wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
He says, I'm interested in how you used rap. How you used Rap Genius to determine which songs are, quote, Mormon safe. Did you somehow use the search feature to eliminate, quote, bad songs? I am a PA announcer and would like to be able to make a playlist with this type of music. Thank you for any consideration that you may give to my request. So that's the guy looking for safe music for being a Mormon guy.
Well, you came to the right place.
So DJ Rob, I will make sure you get this. And then this email. I heard on a recent Articles of News you talking about the missing piece to your group of hosts.
Wow, they all start out like exactly
right?
The same, too.
Isn't it interesting? It seemed that for your male hosts, you lacked the, quote, family man
with kids.
Well, it stuck with me as I kept catching up on shows, and here I am writing you, potentially trying to offer my services, so let me give you the Zach story.
Oh, I like his name, though. His name stands out.
His last name's Archuleta, and he says no relation.
Well, still, that's got, cachet in the industry.
First off, he says, I found the Cultural Hall years ago as I searched for LDS podcasts on iTunes. I think I listened to one episode and worried whether it was pro-Mormon or not. Well, iTunes was funky back then, and it didn't update to my device for a while. Once I got it working and listened to my first couple episodes, I was hooked, especially once I found out that you, Richie, were hosting it. The reason for that is my brother Rob. I don't know for certain what he went by in high school, but you went to high school and then the Cleveland, Ohio mission with Rob. And I know his brother, Elder Archuleta.
Okay.
Let's see. So Rob has always kept small tabs on you and pointed out if you were a show at the Desert Star. Whenever you talk about your mission, it reminds me of getting Rob's letters home, and it makes it a little bit more personal.
Hey, there you go.
Additionally, it's funny how small the world is. When I was listening to Lindsay Throw Your Hands Up in the Ayerts, And I realized that I went to Hillcrest with her husband about the same time.
Small Lake City, that's what they call this town.
So there is a strange friend of friends connection that Facebook would try to jab in my face to add to my friends list. See? Yeah,
too good sheepish rhetoric. To add you, though. Huh?
He says, so why am I the Family Guy fit? Well, I'll give you the Mormon background. I'm pretty close to a stereotypical Mormon guy story. I grew up in Sandy with two active parents, one from Pioneer Stock. One was a convert. He converted her, but that's a story for another time. Yeah. Now I'm 30 years old. I've always been active in the church and the kind that almost jokes that if I miss a couple of weeks for various reasons, they will think I'm inactive. I served a mission in Quebec, French-speaking, returned home, and continued to study at BYU. I met my wife there basically my first day back on campus. We started dating a couple months later and were married 15 months after that. I was 23 and she was 20.
Whoa.
7 years later. How many kids? 7 years later.
Oh, you didn't say it, huh? Let's say five.
Nope, four.
Oh, dang it.
They range from 17 months to 2 years apart. We planned it that way because it works for us. So that's why your mention of a male family man struck me as, quote, I would be perfect for that. What? Some other interesting details. I graduated from BYU with my BA in theater arts, directing and dramaturgy, which means I get all your internal jokes when you break into song and everyone on the show is confused. Yes! I never got a job in theater, though. The closest I got was writing volunteer online reviews for the Utah Theater Bloggers Association.
Yeah.
I was intending to be a doctor, but dropped that my last year at BYU. I ended up at Goldman Sachs for 5 years and now work for an Intermountain Healthcare doing accounting-like work. I'm also in school for my second bachelor's in nursing, which is, you know, a lot like theater.
Yeah, certainly.
Which is the current end goal. That's also why I half wonder why I'm writing this. I'm super busy with 40-hour job, plus school, plus family of six. But if somehow I can help host or chat or occasionally be on some of the shows, maybe that's a perspective that you need.
Hmm.
Okay, I'm done for now. There's my fly on the resume. There we go. I was like, what the?
On the fly resume. It's like charades.
But I cannot entirely explain why I am sending you. If my perspective does interest you, shoot me back an email. We can discuss how it might be able to work. Thanks for the show, and I'll keep a spot open for you on the back row. He's good.
Oh, like he's got
wanna,
the tagline.
If you
want to
include references in here.
And he should have said, I hope you'll be saving a seat for me on the back row, because that's where I'll be.
And if you weren't able to read this email this week, I hope you'll
be able to read it next week and in safety.
Anyway, so yeah, I might do a small episode of Let's Get to Know These Guys and get people's sort of perspectives about it. Share that with everyone.
Sure. Yeah, here's the thing, though, about that last one anyway, and I hope he doesn't take offense, but I'm just thinking... he's so stereotypically Mormon. Why is that perfect? You know, we like to,
right?
You know, it's not necessarily Mormon.
I think we might could use some stereotype, but the thing that I read in this email is the same thing that he said.
There is no stereotype.
I'm in school with a 40-hour job. I've got my wife and four kids at home. But you know, if we can work it out.
Yeah, and then so when Richie petitions on Facebook, who can do articles and news in 45 minutes? I don't think he's gonna be able to answer
that. Maybe, you know. Let's do some actual articles of news. Hit it, Peter.
You can't lose articles of news.
A follow-up on this story. We've mentioned it here before, but it continues on. This from the Salt Lake Tribune. Attorneys for four Navajos suing the LDS Church over alleged sexual abuse said Wednesday, that is yesterday, that they intend to subpoena the faith's president, President Thomas S. Monson, to testify about the former program that placed children in Mormon homes off the reservation during the school year. So basically what it was is kids in the Navajo Nation would leave the Navajo Nation during the school year so that they could be taught in regular school, sort of be adapted into society, and then they would come back.
Type
thing. Yeah, they would be able to come back onto the reservation
on the
in
res.
The summertime.
Yeah.
On the res. The remarks came after a federal judge in Salt Lake City rejected a church argument that Navajo tribal courts do not have jurisdiction over three lawsuits alleging that the Utah-based religion is liable for damages resulting from sexual abuse to tribal members while they participated in the church's Indian student placement program between the years 1965 and 1983. That ruling may clear the way for attorneys to subpoena Monson, the increasingly frail 89-year-old leader of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, people will say, well, why do they need to talk to President Monson?
Sure.
In that time frame, he had a considerable amount to do with
that program.
The program that was going on, the Indian Student Placement Program between the years of 1965 and 1983.
Yeah.
So it's not so much as he's the leader of the church and we need to go after the leader of the church. It happens to be the position that he's in right now.
Administrative position in the case.
Quote, this was from Greg Vernon, the Navajo's attorney. We think that he has very germane information. Monson may have inside knowledge about the placement program and about George P. Lee. Do you know who that is? He's the one-time Mormon general authority who might have overseen it on the reservation, that it being the program, according to a court filing. Lee was excommunicated in 1989 and in 1994 pleaded guilty to attempted sexual abuse of a 12-year-old girl. And then he subsequently died in the year 2010.
Was he of Native American descent?
Uh-huh.
I remember that then.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. The Navajo's attorneys believe that Lee had oversight of the placement program while living on the reservation and asserted that he had further information that Lee sexually molested other young girls.
Oh, geez.
The LDS Church has no immediate comment. It's fascinating to see that President Monson may in fact be subpoenaed to talk about that. Not that he is being alleged as having done any of that. Certainly not. That's not what they're saying. But that he may have to go and testify.
No. Well, I'm sure the attorneys will fight that tooth and nail.
Yeah, as much as they can, for sure.
But
where do I want to go from here?
Do you want me to do one of these fabulous ones?
I want you to hang on real quick.
Okay.
The sketch group Studio C.
Oh, yeah, Studio C.
You know, I watch some of their videos, and I like them. They're really hit and miss.
Yeah, well, their two biggest hits were super funny, though.
Which is?
Scott Sterling. those were funny.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like the volleyball one was quite hilarious.
Give people an idea roughly what it's about.
It's the first one they did was, it was a shootout match between Yale and North Carolina, and the goalie for, I can't remember what, Yale, I think, as Scott Sterling, and he gets hit in the face with the penalty kick every time, no matter what they do. He's like totally concussed, and they put him in a chair, and they still hit him in the face. Mm-hmm. And then he's like crawling away from the goal. It bounces off the crossbar and hits him in the face. Pretty funny. It went viral, I know. And I thought Studio C was pretty stupid, and I finally watched it, and I was like, well, that was pretty funny. So they did Scott Sterling Part 2, and it was volleyball match between, again, North Carolina and Yale. And, yeah, it's for, like, you know, the set match or whatever, and there's, like, 5 points that they do. And it was, you know, it was really creative how they made him get hit in the face because you knew it was coming.
Right.
But I thought it was better than the first one.
Really?
Well, and they'd write really good dialogue. I mean, for that one, they had really good dialogue, like pop culture references and things like that. And so they have a lot of potential. But just like, you know, Saturday Night Live, I used to watch it in the 90s, early 90s, and I remember – I thought it was so funny, but you go back and you watch an entire episode, and you're like, no, it was like two sketches were funny, maybe, and then the rest was just filler.
It's like, and really depends on who the guest, especially with Saturday Night Live. Yeah.
Which was surprising, because sometimes, like, I remember Jason Priestley from 90210, I remember that episode was so funny, and then other ones that you thought would be good, like, I don't know, whoever, they weren't as funny.
Lady Gaga was one in the most recent history. I thought she was great.
Yeah. Well, I remember Jerry Seinfeld was one that you expected to be funny, and it was. His was so
really great.
Funny. Yeah.
So here we go. Studio C, they received national attention from Conan O'Brien's Instagram, because it's Instagrammed out. Just ran into some of the talented people from the sketch show Studio C. They brought a ton of laughter to my house. Now, the Huffington Post recommends a good dose of Studio C to bring some much-needed humor and lightheartedness post-election. It was a long and bumpy election ride, wasn't it? Writes this article, and for some of us, it feels like it ended in a car crash. But no matter how we feel about the outcome, we can all agree that we're tired. We've seen and heard things that have depleted us. We could appreciate a diversion. We could use some entertainment that is fresh and funny, but not vulgar. We've had enough vulgarity to last us lifetimes. As this continues to go on. Studio C is a comedy sketch group and show. It's a burst of sunshine. It offers innocent, creative laughter for families. Kids tend to adore it. It's soul-wincing free. There's none of that queasy feeling when we get when something is off color or profane. That's all quoted from the Huffington Post. So HuffPo giving a little love to the folks down in Studio C.
Yeah, they're talented.
They did a bit for me that I sort of appreciated, which was it's like Lindsey Stirling's brother.
Oh, okay. Lesser known or something.
Yeah, lesser known brother, and he plays the tuba, and he does the dancing tuba. It's funny for about 15 seconds.
So you're saying, right? There's some milking going on after 30
seconds?
Yeah,
well, no, it's like any of those things where it's like, that is so funny and I'm done laughing now.
It's just an idea and you have to make it last 3 minutes, and 2.5 of that is, yeah.
But yeah, I feel like...
Well, little kids probably love it because kids watch that stuff and kids can, and they'll eat up the whole 3-minute sketch.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So. Why don't you do one of those stories right now?
Okay, this is from the police blotter in Rexburg.
I love that you got the voice.
Yeah.
All right.
The headline says, police, anti-Trump graffiti spray painted at local Mormon church in Rexburg. The Rexburg Police Department is investigating an incident of vandalism that occurred prior... this is poorly written. Yep. Anyway, a church was vandalized in Rexburg. The police reported that a Mormon church building was vandalized with the words, I think you said it's "Find Trump," spray painted in green on the door, or "F Trump."
They said it was F dot dot dot, and the only thing I could think of was find Trump.
Or Ford Trump.
Oh, Ford Trump.
Or
no. Fund Trump.
No, don't fund Trump. He's rich already. So they reported it to the church members, reported to the Rexburg police on November 12th. Members then covered the graffiti with similar colored spray paint until the damage can be permanently fixed, according to Rexburg police officials. And this quote comes from church spokesman Merv Brown.
Merv? What happened to Eric Hawkins?
I don't know. Maybe this is the local one. Church spokesman.
Oh, okay.
Merv
I was going to say,
says,
Merv must be, Merv's got to be Idaho. Is Merv.
Yeah, Merv. Should we do it in an Idaho accent? The best stereotype I can find. Our church buildings are places of worship and community gathering where all are welcome. We are saddened by the damage that has occurred at this location. At this point, authorities have just begun their initial investigation, and all inquiries should be referred to them. Wow. That is one good...
Thanks for that report, Merv. Yeah. Now to this.
Over to you, Richie.
So there was an earthquake, a pretty bad one in New Zealand, 7.5.
Yeah, wasn't there one there like a few years ago in the exact same place, in Christchurch or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just like the worst place you can live, because every time you start to rebuild, I mean, it's beautiful, but
yeah, it's not the worst place you can live. It is gorgeous.
Yeah.
All missionaries are safe. There was a 7.5 earthquake and a tsunami
That is huge, 7.5.
Wow. Let's see. The members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Christchurch are gathering food, water, and other emergency supplies, which will be transported this week by helicopter to rural and remote communities in North Canterbury. That's where Britt's name is Brett.
Yeah, that's
where
my name is Brett.
Brett. Two people lost their lives when the earthquake struck the small towns of Wa'ayo, Hammer Springs, and Kaiukuura.
That must be Maori you're speaking.
Yeah, it was.
Oh. Well,
I picked up a little of that in Cleveland.
Cool.
Train lines, the main national highway, and other roads have been damaged, cutting off several communities. Local Latter-day Saint members report that all missionaries are safe, and as are all other members of the church in the affected areas.
Did you see the viral photo? I would think it was viral anyway. I saw it on Facebook where there was like some field and a bunch of it just caved in or collapsed.
No.
And there was a little island probably about 15 feet by 15 feet, and 3 cows were stuck on it.
Really?
And there's just a little patch of grass. It looked like a butte in like southern Utah or whatever, with grass on top.
Like,
and there's 3 cows
come on.
Just stranded on top. It looks like some dune buggy course or something. And there's cows stuck in the middle. Poor cows.
Yeah. Poor cows.
Yeah. I think some articles talking about how a bunch of sheep are stranded too. Of course, when I was a tour guide in Yellowstone, a lot of the Kiwis said they got sick of people asking them about, oh, there's more sheep in your country than people, aren't there?
Yeah.
You know, so just like the green jello and the polygamy joke stuff. In Utah, they're sick of the cheap jokes.
Paul Raleigh.
Hey, good old Paul Raleigh. Hooray for Raleigh.
He does an article for the Salt Lake Tribune. When Governor Herbert and Superintendent Sidney Dixon issued a joint statement last week condemning harassment and bullying in their schools after Donald Trump's election victory, they encouraged students to be tolerant and compassionate towards their classmates. Perhaps they should have addressed those statements, says the Salt Lake Tribune article by Paul Raleigh, to their parents. A Davis County, which is a county north of Salt Lake County in Utah,
that's where Ogden is,
whom I won't identify, said was blindsided by those she considered good friends and colleagues in her Mormon ward.
Wow.
They berated her 12-year-old daughter because the family had a Hillary Clinton sign in the yard.
Yep.
The haranguing came during a carpool in front of the child's house, chiding her parents for being, quote,
what?
Evil Democrats.
Jesus, seriously.
The tongue lashing has strained the relationship between their daughter and the innocent preteen whose parents had the audacity to support Clinton. The two girls had been best friends, the anti-Clinton parents. The wife is the Women's Relief Society president in the ward. Later told the 12-year-old's mother that they no longer would attend the Sunday school class taught by her husband.
What? Give me a break.
They must have not got the memo from the top leaders of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints reaffirming the Utah-based faith political neutrality and encouraging members to be active in civic affairs and reminding them that Mormon principles can be found in various parties.
Yeah. That's nice.
Isn't that great?
Well, here. You remember last week how I said Elizabeth Smart was in my ward?
Uh-huh.
You know who else was in my ward?
No.
A lot of political people. So.
Huntsmans. You had the Huntsmans.
No.
No? The Romneys.
No.
The Herberts.
No.
You had...
yeah, okay, I don't know if you're going to get... Jake Garn.
Okay.
Big-time Republican senator
and
in Utah.
Former NASA guy, right?
Yeah, he went into space.
Yep.
His kid was my age. Ted Wilson, former Democrat
mayor
of Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City.
And he ran for governor a few times.
Lost.
And Wayne Owens, who was a congressman for a long time, Democrat, and his son just ran against Mia Love.
And lost.
So, yeah, we had these guys doing, and occasionally they did attack ads against each other on TV.
In the same ward?
Yeah, and they're all in the same ward. Oh, Dee Dee Corradini lived in who was the mayor of Salt Lake City. She's not Mormon, but she was in our neighborhood too. So it's like
uncomfortable?
They were cordial. Like, I remember we were doing a fireside to prepare for climbing of the Grand Teton for our youth trip. And Ted Wilson's a big time mountain climber. And Jake Garden comes in and he goes, "Hey there, Jake, you can come climb the Tetons with us. You can see my space." And Jake Garn was kind of a matter-of-fact dude, and he's just like, "Well, from space, the Tetons look flat." So, all of us in the, you know, my age group, we would always make fun of him. Not to his face, of course, but behind his back. I was like, "Well, from space, the Tetons look flat." Like, wow. Every time we mentioned his name.
How uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, most awards I've ever been in, everyone's, you know, middle-aged and Republican.
Yeah, no, there is some, it's an interesting neighborhood up there, so. Yeah.
But I don't know that I've ever, trying to think if this is true, I don't know that I've ever or very rarely had the political, like, here is what I am. I am a Republican. I very rarely hear that. You hear that happens a lot, but I have very rarely
like
heard.
Church?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've heard people say, President Obama, blah, 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 which sort of makes me tend to believe that those people are Republican.
Yeah.
But I very rarely heard, well, I'm a this,
yeah,
and that means this. I very rarely heard that.
Yeah.
But where you... You know, and people, I feel like if you're not running for office, can kind of lead that, at least political affiliation, sort of under the carpet. Like, you can, because you could be liberal kind of on your social issues as a Republican and very conservative financially,
and then,
right? And maybe define yourself as a Republican. But when you're running against the guy in the same ward and you're like, this guy, this, and he doesn't even do his home teaching.
Yeah, well, I remember, like, I think it was the attack I'm thinking of was Jake Garn was retiring, and then Wayne Owens was running for Senate against Bob Bennett, I think it was who it was. And so Jake did a support ad for Bob Bennett, but also attacked Wayne Owens. And as a kid, I was just like, you guys are, like, in the same war, and you're doing this.
So uncomfortable.
Yeah.
All right. And then you've still got one story, right?
Yeah.
Hang on. Let me do, because I think we're going to, let me do this story and then we'll end on kind of a cool note.
All right.
On December 6, 2009, two-year-old Gardy Marty, which is the coolest name we've had on the cultural holiday.
Gardy Marty time. Sounds like somebody in like a PBS television show, like Romper Room or something.
Oh, yeah. Or like Zoobly Zoo. Room. Yeah, Zoobly Zoo. That was the one I was trying to think. There's magic and wonder. It's waiting for you. You. It's as close as... Okay, so anyway.
But I digress.
A lot.
Anyway.
Yeah. Gardy Marty's father, Guizno.
Oh, man.
was serving as a counselor in the Haiti Port-au-Prince Mission Presidency, and he was kidnapped from an LDS meeting house.
Wow.
7 years later, the child rescue organization Underground Railroad, we've had those guys here. Ed Smart was who we interviewed about it, but Timothy Ballard, as we mentioned in last week's Articles of News, one of the gentlemen of the church to kind of keep an eye on. They continue the search for Gardy Marty, still missing. According to the Operation Underground Railroad Facebook page, rescuers are closer than ever and are requesting your prayers. Soon after Gardy was abducted, the kidnappers demanded a ransom of $150,000. Guizno knew it was an impossible sum, but he managed to scrape together $4,000. Unfortunately, the negotiations disintegrated when a 7.0 magnitude earthquake rocked the Caribbean country. You remember this?
Yeah.
6 weeks later, in the chaos that followed, Gardy disappeared without a trace. We determined he was kidnapped and trafficked, most likely slave labor, said Timothy Ballard. After careful research and tracking, Operation Underground Railroad discovered a location where children were being sold for $15,000 apiece, which is absurd, and this is 2016, and this is happening.
Yeah.
So, in February 2014, the team, alongside Haitian Special Forces, made their move. They liberated 28 kids, put three people in jail, but Gardy was not one of them. After the operation, Ballard had the heartbreaking task of informing Guizno that his son was not among those that were rescued. With tears in his eyes, he recalls, "Guizno told me, if I have to lose my son so these 28 kids can be rescued, then I'm willing to do that." We've organized 8 separate fasts to find Gardy, adds Matt. And you got to check this out. It's about the cutest kid, Gardy Marty. At theculturehall.com, you can check out the link to it. Like, he's just tiny. About the cutest kid.
Yeah.
So it makes it even that much more heartbreaking. We've organized 8 separate fasts. There's a lot that can happen, but we believe that we are on the trail and that we're getting very close to rescuing him. I have no doubt that my son will be found, says Guizno Marty. I'm sure it will be soon. Knowing how many people are praying for the safe return of Gardy, so many prayers cannot be in vain.
Yeah.
And they have a couple memes, and the hashtag is pray for Gardy. So if that's something that you can put into your prayers. You know, it was interesting. So a friend of ours put this on Facebook the other day about, you know, when people are like, hey, say a prayer for me. My family's having a rough time, right? Yeah. People do that a
prayers
lot
are
on
appreciated,
Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Prayers are appreciated. Yeah. I don't know what you do if you do prayers or take a moment or you
thoughts.
Know, throw good juju or thoughts or, right? People, all sorts of things.
Good mojambo.
It sort of runs the gamut as far as what people will
good,
ask for.
Good vibration.
But I have decided...
Yeah.
I have this little notebook, and because I've always got a pen.
Polly Pocket?
I'm going to...
Holly, what is it?
Polly Pocket?
No, sorry. Holly Hobby notebook or whatever it's called.
No. I'm going to write down, and I'm actually going to try and do this for a little while, because I feel, you know, there's nothing like going from having a family, essentially, to not having a family to make you feel super selfish. I'm going to try, and I encourage other people to try, and let's see what happens. When people say, and it doesn't have to be just social media and stuff, but when people are like, hey, we say a prayer, write the name down in the little thing and be like, okay, so then at night when I'm saying my prayers, I'll say, you know what, and for whatever, for Marty Gardy, Gardy Marty, now I've already...
Or Marty McFly.
What is it?
Gotta have a Back to the Future reference in every episode.
Fumbled up in my head. Guardy Marty. So now Guardy Marty, yeah, in every episode of Back to the Future. Guardy Marty, you know, include that in prayer and just do it. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
All right, now you can do your story.
Okay. Well, I was going to just add to that. Like, I know my roommate Nate says he does the temple roll thing. He gets like on the phone and calls them all up. And,
oh, really?
Yeah. He said he had a friend who was in a motorcycle accident that he put his name on a ton of rolls, and that guy got improved pretty quickly, surprisingly, to a lot of people.
You can do that now online, too, I think.
So right? I think it's varies, is what he told me.
Different temples do it different ways, right?
So you call or do it online.
Right.
Yeah. So that's, you know, everything helps. When the chips are down, that's what I mean. My fundamental belief is those things like prayer and blessings and fasting, those things tend to work for me to make me feel better. All right. So anyway, my next one is a controversial story from the Salt Lake Tribune by our friend Peggy Fletcher Stack. She's a friend of the program, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. LDS Church retires, quote, Mormon Apostles Little Factory, quotes, pamphlet.
Okay. So I want to stop because this article pretty much is stated in the headline, so we can just sort of talk about it.
Sure.
Do you know the pamphlet that they're talking about?
No, I mean, I've seen this headline a bunch, but I didn't click on it. But now I read through it and I know what it is.
Okay, so go ahead. Talk about, so there's a pamphlet that has a reference to the Little Factory. Go ahead. It's going to get mature for a second, everybody.
Or immature, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. With Britt and I, it will be mature content handled immaturely.
Okay. So anyway, for 40 years, I guess, Packer's advice to teenage boys about their little factories was widely distributed inside the LDS church and widely mocked outside of it. I have no idea why. So it was in a pamphlet called To Young Men Only, which addressed the issue of masturbation, which is a word not mentioned often amongst church members, to help boys as they navigate puberty. And then they've taken it off the faith's website and that store.lds.org for ecclesiastical leaders to obtain printed copies, which is funny to me. They would still have that till now.
I mean, it was a go-to, right? Like miracle forgiveness has been one that has now sort of gone away.
Mm-hmm.
Your little factory pamphlet is another one.
Packer approached the topic during the 76th October priesthood session of the semi-annual general conference. And he used the euphemism little factory to describe the male anatomy. Should I read a quote here?
Yes, please.
This little factory moves quietly into operation as a normal and expected pattern of growth that begins to produce the life-giving substance.
He's talking about sperm.
Sperm, yeah. It will do so, perhaps, as long as you live. For the most part, unless you tamper with it, you will hardly be aware that it is working at all. I shouldn't be laughing, I guess.
No.
And as you move closer to manhood, this little factory will sometimes produce an oversupply of this substance. The Lord has provided a way for that to be released. It will happen without any help or without any resistance from you.
Wet dream.
Perhaps.
Right. It's a little bit of, it's a little, and that's what I think, that's why I think that, because you're giggling your way through this like you're 10 years old.
Well, the next line is just...
Go ahead.
Perhaps one night you will have a dream. In the course of it, the release valve that controls the factory will open and will release all that is excess.
Yeah. You're literally like you're 5 years old. I just want you to know that. The factory, as we go on, the factory, an automatic release... work on their own schedule. The Lord intended it to be that way. It is to regulate itself. This will not happen very often. You may go a longer period of time, and there will be no need for this to occur. When it does, you should not feel guilty. It is the nature of young manhood and is part of becoming a man. So here's what it is, though. I think that for a culture that has a really difficult time talking about sex,
yeah,
like this was a way that... That
well, about like the ultimate taboo thing, masturbation, right?
Right. So it was a way that we could go, all right, this isn't the greatest example, but imagine you're like a little factory and, you know, imagine there's too much and then there's a valve and then it takes care of yourself. So you don't need to do anything.
Just don't release the valve yourself.
Yeah.
It's automatic.
It'll do it itself. Don't feel guilty. Yeah. So,
it works, but it's funny. Just, you know, that's 40 years old now, and it was still being used. So,
but now they've retired it.
Well, I think if you brought the sex girls in on this, they would say, "Well, this is part of the problem."
Right. Yeah. And probably worth the, you know, that may be a whole mature episode that we do in the future.
Sure.
But not you and I.
No, not at all.
As you, as you giggle your way through reading about the little factory. My gosh. All right.
She said stroke.
All right. Here we go. I've decided to go out on a positive note.
Hey, I like it.
Quote, "You are my brother," read the email message Matt Henninger received on January 3rd of 2016. After 53 years of wondering where he came from, Henninger said that this message changed his life. Henninger was born in Idaho Falls, Idaho, and adopted as a baby. He said he had tried in the past to find information about his birth family, but after many unsuccessful attempts, he decided to end this search. "It kept being a little frustrating, but I still had hope that one day I would be able to meet my birth mom," recalled Henninger, who lives in Gilbert, Arizona, with his family. Henninger's wife heard about a DNA test offered through Ancestry.com. Not owned by the church, used heavily by the church, but owned by a church member. That's not part of the story, just as a point of reference for everybody.
Yeah.
Henninger's wife heard about a DNA test offered through Ancestry.com while working at the Gilbert, Arizona Temple of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. After all the dead-end search, Henninger said he wasn't thinking about finding his family when he took the test. He just wanted to find out what his ethnicity was, which I think is kind of an interesting thing, right?
Sure.
If you're adopted and you don't really know about it, and you're like, am I Hispanic?
Yeah.
Am I, like...
Am I Welsh?
Yeah, right? Like, where is this coming from? I think that would be a fascinating thing. I think it's less fascinating as a white person, like, for me, but, like, if I was sort of ethnically vague, like, well. I would be fascinated to be like, I'm thinking like Hispanic, but maybe it's, you know?
Yeah, well, maybe you do, Richie. You just got to do your research.
Yeah, I'm sure that I'm not Hispanic. Look at my face. Look at my skin.
You're 1/10 or 1/100th.
Ancestry DNA is a genealogy testing service to help people discover a little bit more about their family story. They launched it, that service, in 2012. In 2015, the database included about 800 members. In so many ways, technology has helped progress this work. Never before were we able to look at that data in one individual and then cross-compare it to 1.5 million people who also have the same markers. Ancestry DNA uses microarray. It's a very powerful test. Helps you find sweat. It's a $99 DNA test kit. I'm skipping. It takes 6 to 8 weeks. They compare it across the whole thing. And back to Henninger, which is the story.
Okay.
"I thought it was a great thing," Henninger said. "I actually know now where my biological ancestors originated from, and I thought that was worth it. I thought that was the end of it. I had no idea," he said, "what would happen next."
Hmm.
It had been several months since Henninger had logged into his Ancestry account. When he checked in December 2015, he had received a message from someone whose DNA matched as close family / first cousins.
Hmm.
Henninger's blog at azhenninger.blogspot.com. The message was from Joyce Bergner of Spanish Fork, Utah. Genealogy had always been a love of hers. She enjoyed helping others find their relatives. She had taken the Ancestry DNA test 4 years ago, and in August 2015, she received a message that she may have a possible first cousin match. She sent a messenger to Henninger. A message. Not a messenger to Henninger.
Like
a message to Henninger, and then waited. Henninger saw the message. He sent an explanation that he did not know anything about his biological family, and Bergner offered to help. She was anxious, and intrigued to not only help him find his family, but to know if and how he might be related to her. As they continued the correspondence and Henninger provided details of what little he did know about his birth, a memory came to Bergner's mind that she thought that as she sought to understand what her connection to Henninger could be. "I had no longer begun with a strong when a strong impression came upon me and a vivid memory came into view. I heard a voice say, 'It was your mother.' And I immediately knew who Matt was." Hmm. "He was my brother."
Wow.
According to Henninger's blog, when Bergner was 12 years old, her mother had a child, Henninger, who she had him out of wedlock. The blog post states that Bergner was already one of five children, and then the family was living on welfare, so their mother felt the situation required that she place the baby up for adoption. Because the adoption details have been kept private, both Henninger and Bergner knew very little about the situation until they connected through Ancestry DNA. Henninger remembered the tears and excitement that he shared with his wife when he saw the message from Bergner. He had always wanted to meet his birth family, and he was anxious to see what they looked like. Bergner told him that there was a picture of their mom, who had died in 1992, on her family tree on Ancestry.com, and Henninger immediately looked at the family tree. "It's hard to explain what it feels like," he said, "but when you are 53 and you've never known what your birth mom looks like and you finally see her for the first time, it's emotionally overwhelming. The best thing I looked forward to was meeting Joyce and then giving her a hug because I could feel my mom through her." Sometimes records are closed or there's a closed adoption, so DNA is our only hope to find connections, Swain said. DNA provides this really great tool. With the help of Ancestry DNA, Henninger was able to meet his biological family for the first time. When someone's missing from your family, there's always that missing link, a blank spot. Having him in our lives now, we feel more peace, and it has given us another window of opportunity to extend our family and have someone else in our lives. If you want to find out more about this, you can go to a link at theculturalhall.com or it's dna.ancestry.com. You can also find a link to the Henninger's blog. That's at AZ for Arizona, henninger.blogspot.com.
Yeah. You know what's interesting?
Huh?
I found out years ago that my mom had a kid when she was a teenager.
Really?
And so, yeah, I have some half-brother out there. And,
you've never met him?
Well, she gave him up for adoption. Yeah, she was like 17 or something.
Track him down.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Ancestry. Wait, hang on. Let me get the link again. I'll get it. Wait, that's not the right paper. Give me a second. I'm going to keep trying to start the thing. DNA.ancestry.com. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when I found out,
tried to find him?
No.
Why wouldn't you try and find him? You got a half brother.
I found this out when I was like 12 at a therapy session when my sister was going through a rehab program. And yeah, I was shocking. I knew my mom, you know, she's a convert and she's had a tough life in a lot of ways, but yeah, it was.
You have a half brother. You should find your half brother.
Yeah, well, maybe he's reached out to my mom before. I don't know. I could ask her. I've never brought it up since I found out as a kid. But
when you were 12?
Yeah, we're like in a group therapy session.
Year,
yeah.
Not quite 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That isn't at all curious to you?
It's a fascinating thing. I don't really ever think about it, though.
Would you be friends with him if you found your brother now?
I don't know. He'd probably be, I don't know. Because my mom's from Ohio and
so
her
he
family's
could be anywhere.
Really, yeah, he's...
Was he put up for adoption in Ohio?
I don't know. I don't know much about
it. You don't know where she was living?
I don't know. She was all over the place. I don't know.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got a half-brother.
Well...
You know... I'm going to make you track him down.
I've got a lot of half-brothers, actually.
Yeah. I'm going to bully you into it.
Yeah.
We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body.
We hope that if you weren't able to attend this week, that you'll be able to attend next week.
And that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime,
we'll be saving a seat for you
on the back row
of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.